The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Speaking to you from, well, now a sunny Edstone, England. It's also been a very wet Edstone, England here on our campus near Stratford-upon-Avon. Well, it's been an eventful week in the news. I think in a lot of ways it's also been a pretty frustrating week in the news. I'm kind of tempted to say never in the field of human politics has so much hypocrisy been shown by so many and picked up on by so few. It is pretty galling to see so much of these lies and hypocrisy everywhere in British politics and American politics. I want to talk about some of that today, but I want to really make sure as well that I have time at the end to talk about the great hope, the solution to all of these problems as well. If I just talk about or just kind of expose some of the lies and things that are going on, well, I'll go away from this very frustrated. You may well go away from this very frustrated. But there is a great hope that this time of year really does remind us of that we can and do need to keep in mind. But really is dramatic news out of both the UK and the US over the last few days, with more updates on those big stories coming yesterday. There have been the impeachment proceedings against President Trump beginning, the phone call, the transcript from that phone call from the Ukrainian, between the Ukrainian president and the American president. Those transcripts were published yesterday. In Britain yesterday, we had one of the most angry debates in the House of Commons I've ever seen, as Parliament had its first day back after being unprorogued, where the Parliament was suspended and then the Supreme Court ruled them unsuspended. Nigel Farage, the Brexit Party leader, he tweeted, "Politics in the UK and the USA are two sides of the same coin. The 2008 losers will not accept the result and are prepared to destroy trust in politics. On both sides of the pond, they will be judged harshly at the ballot box." And there are some important trends that are exposed on when you look at politics on both sides of the pond. And something even some common trends, some important trends that Nigel Farage isn't even aware of. So I want to talk about those today, and I'll start with the latest news from America, seeing as that's where most of our listeners are. Yesterday, like I said, we had the White House releasing those notes from Mr. Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian President Zelensky, which I don't know whether there's a moment in politics where I've ever felt more like I might be living in a political comedy than with all of this. I mean, it's serious, and like I said, there's bits about it that could be frustrating. But Zelensky, like, really? He was a comedian 2-3 years ago, and then you probably know the story. On his comedy show, he played like a school teacher who almost accidentally becomes the president of Ukraine. And it's all of these adventures of this bumbling school teacher who's now president of a country and all of this. And then now he's right at the center of like impeaching the president of the United States, this world leader. The one that was a comedian a few years ago? Anyway, we've been told with this transcript that President Trump had been caught red-handed doing something thoroughly corrupt. You know, that's the reporting that we were getting, that he'd asked Ukraine for dirt on his rival Joe Biden, that he threatened to cut off aid to Ukraine if they didn't help him. You know, basically saying, hey, I want you to do some illegal spying on my rival, and if you don't do it, I will cut off aid to your country. That's what we were led to expect, something like that in the transcript, in the lead up to all of this. And then the transcript came out yesterday afternoon, our time over here, I guess, yesterday morning in the States. And I read it before I read about it. I kind of wanted to get, just see what it says in black and white before that's colored by what other people say about it. And my first response reading that was kind of like, well, yep, nothing there, which pretty much was what I was expecting, but no threats. I tried to look for even things that kind of could be hints of threats or things that could be construed as a threat. You know, anything that kind of seemed like a wink, wink, nod, nod, hey, you know, we give you lots of aid. Be a shame if anything happened to that aid. By the way, can you look into Joe Biden for me? You know, I thought, well, I looked for anything like that. Couldn't find it. And so I was genuinely curious how the left were going to respond to this. It fell so far short of what they sold it as. You know, were they going to... I genuinely wasn't sure. I didn't expect them to come out and say, well, my bad. Sorry. Let's move on now. I thought, well, maybe they'll dig up something else to, like, you know, distract attention to, like, just move on, drop it and move on to something else, the way that they've kind of done with the Mueller report. That didn't work. Well, dropped that, moved on. Though I guess they're still kind of resurrecting that. So I thought maybe they'd do that. But no, they just pushed right on with the accusations. Like I said, I couldn't find any insinuation of a threat. If you read the transcript, it's not there. But the left still found some. And even they made stuff up. This is clip one. This is clip one is from CNN discussing this report. And I mean, we'll play the clip. There were things they say in here that are just factually not true. This is clip one.
A just released transcript of a phone call shows President Trump asking Ukrainian President Zelensky to investigate his political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. And in this call, the president repeatedly stresses how much the U.S. does for Ukraine. And then he says, quote, I would like you to do us a favor. The president asks Zelensky to dig up dirt on Biden and his son, Hunter, who sat on the board of a Ukrainian energy company while his dad was vice president.
So the way you'd, I mean, that's not what it said. What they said, it said, isn't what it said. You can read the transcript you set yourself. What happens in that transcript is President Trump says, hey, can you do us a favor? And he asks for Ukraine's help looking back to the 2016 election and some of the things that happened back then. Now, the left has spent years saying, well, we need to look at the 2016 election meddling. They've said for years, well, some of this comes from Russia, some of this comes from Ukraine. So, okay, the president asks Ukraine for some help investigating that. You know, he says, can you do us a favor? He talks about that. Then it's almost a page later that the Ukrainian president brings up Giuliani and some of his requests for help. And then Mr. Trump mentions Biden. But it's like a page later beyond the can you do us a favor. And this is not just CNN. In some ways, MSNBC was even worse. Here's a clip from their news report, supposedly, on this phone transcript.
What there is proof of and what there is a paper trail of, because the White House just released it, is a summary or notes of a conversation that the president had with the man that was sitting to his right, the president of Ukraine, where he said, will you do me a favor and investigate Vice President Biden's son? Will you do me a favor and get involved in the 2020 election? Vice President Biden is my chief political opponent. At that point, he was leading Donald Trump quite a lot in the polls at the time.
But that's just not what it said. I mean, if you were relying on that report for your news, then you'd come away with that and think that President Trump had literally said, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you investigate my political rival? It's going to help me out in the next election. And it's simply not true. He said, hey, can you do me a favor? And then talked about something completely different. And then a page later, almost, they started talking about Joe Biden and all of his shenanigans. And this isn't a small point. You know, the narrative coming from the left now is, well, basically, right at the, there's a long paragraph from the Ukrainian president. He's talking about quite a few different things. At the end of this paragraph, he says, we're ready to continue to cooperate for the next steps, especially we are almost ready to buy more javelins from the US for defense purposes. And javelins referring to the anti-tank missile, they're not literally still throwing sticks over in Ukraine. But he says that, and then the president responds, I'd like you to do us a favor. And so people are pointing to that and saying, well, see, he talked about Joe Biden right after the Ukrainian president talked about buying missiles. You know, therefore, they're saying, well, that's kind of a threat. He's saying, okay, we'll give you the missiles if you do us this favor, which, I mean, that's not what it says. And I think it's hard to construe it that way when you read the whole context. I mean, it's a whole paragraph where the Ukrainian president hits on a bunch of different things and President Trump responds by hitting on a bunch of different things. It really does not come across as any kind of implied threat or anything like that. But then secondly, when he says, can you do me a favor? This is where they're pointing to saying, well, this is where he's saying, okay, we'll only give you the missiles if you investigate Joe Biden. He's not even talking about Vice President Biden. He's talking about the 2016 elections. Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal pointed this out. She tweeted, you know, having read the DOJ's Trump Ukraine release, here's the real story. This is another internal attempt to take out a president on the basis of another non-smoking gun. And I don't think many of our listeners are going to be at all surprised about that. She went on to say, media got all this so wrong and the Democrats look all the more partisan and radical to have moved towards impeachment. Now, the other argument that we're hearing about this phone transcript and, you know, what's been released is that, well, it's just wrong for the US to be investigating Joe Biden because he's a candidate in the next election. And okay, well, yeah, there may have been some dodgy things going on here, but you know, you shouldn't be investigating a potential political rival. Well, where was that argument back in 2016? If that's the argument we're making now, well, I mean, by those standards, back in 2016, the Obama administration have said, well, some people have made some allegations about presidential candidate Donald Trump, but we're not going to investigate because he's a presidential candidate and it would be inappropriate to dig up dirt on a presidential candidate. It would be inappropriate for us to investigate, so we're just going to leave it alone. It's such an obvious double standard. And then they send, you know, in reality, of course, they didn't do that. It didn't matter that President Trump was a presidential candidate. In fact, I mean, when you look at where the allegations came from, he was only being investigated because he was a presidential candidate. And then they send people all around the world to investigate Mr. Trump. They get the UK government, the Australian government involved. Agents track down Mr. Trump's campaign associates overseas. You know, they're wiretapping. There's the FISA courts, all of that. And all of this is based on accusations with no evidence. And it's all in an election year against a presidential candidate. And yet they come out and say with Mr. Trump, well, you know, we can't be investigating Joe Biden and his son, Vice President Biden and his son, because he's a presidential candidate. It's just such stunning hypocrisy. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's not stunning. It's pretty consistent with a lot of what we've seen. But a whole lot of hypocrisy and double standards. I want to move on and talk about the UK as well, where we just see exactly the same thing on display. Like I mentioned earlier, Parliament resumed yesterday after the Supreme Court basically declared itself higher than the Queen. Now, the Queen prorogued Parliament. The Supreme Court decided that they had the power to unprorogue Parliament, or in fact, they declared that it had never been prorogued. And even Parliament's supporters, I mean, even the Supreme Court supporters were talking about how this is a big deal, about how they created a new law. About how this is something that's going to have implications for years and years and years. Even its supporters are saying things like, well, it rewrote the British Constitution. And I do want to spend a little time on this. Mr. Stephen Flurry's talked about this a little earlier in the week. But especially when you're not over here, it's easy to underestimate what happened here. You know, there are groups so dedicated to stopping Britain leaving the European Union, they don't care what they wreck in order to stop it. And this is historian David Starkey. He's on the radio talking to Ian Dale on LBC. But he just has some dramatic things to say about what we saw with the Supreme Court this week.
Let's really understand this. This changes the way we are governed. This changes the way we do politics. This changes the way in which we thought of ourselves. I mean, you began talking about the English Constitution and the fact that it was held up for admiration. The events not simply of today or of the last 3 weeks, but the events since the referendum have broken the English British, which is really the English Constitution. They have broken it. It lies shattered in pieces like a noble statue that has been pushed over and deliberately broken. And it is an act of utter vandalism. And once it's broken, I don't think it can be put back together again.
What,
so you asked, you know, again, where we go, the answer is Nobody knows. We are in territory that we have not lost. The last time we were in territory like this, it was settled by war.
Oh, those are just some pretty chilling words there. The English Constitution lies smashed and broken on the floor. The last time we were dealing with these kind of questions, it was ended by war. And it's dramatic happenings this week, and he's absolutely right. I mean, usually courts, politicians, they usually avoid these kind of constitutional questions in the UK because of their association with civil war. But because Brexit is at stake, because people want to keep Britain in the European Union, they'll take an axe to the English Constitution. They'll leave it smashed on the floor if that's what it takes to keep Britain in the European Union. That's how desperate they are to ignore the vote of the people and keep Britain in the EU. And we've seen this, I talked about this in my trumpet brief on Tuesday, an email we send out by a different author every day. But I talked about on that, this is the latest in a whole series of incidents of constitutional vandalism, of people ignoring the law. You know, the Speaker of the House, John Bercow, and the way that his efforts have just completely introduced some radical things into Parliament. He said that he won't be guided by precedent unless it helps keep Britain in the EU. Then he's a stickler for precedent. But if it's to help stop Brexit, well, no, then he's not going to be guided by precedent. And the whole kind of system of how normally the government controls the parliamentary timetable, the government controls what bills are debated, that's all been upended with all kinds of consequences. And now we see the Supreme Court stepping in and setting itself up above the Queen, basically. We have a court that, just like the Supreme Court in the US, just makes stuff up. You know, for example, we saw just a few years ago, the US Supreme Court, or someone finds in the Constitution, some of those judges find in the Constitution, that somehow there's a right to homosexual marriage in there. You know, lesser minds like you or me might not see any mention of the right of a man to quote-unquote marry another man, but those justices discovered one. There's no law in the UK that says that the government can and can't. There's nothing restricting what the government can do in terms of proroguing parliament. So the Supreme Court just made it up. They made up a law that says that, okay, well, now you've got to have a good reason for proroguing parliament, and it has to be within these parameters, and this is the legal test, but they just made it up. It wasn't based on any kind of law. And I'm trying to remember who it was. There's one legal expert saying he doesn't know of any time where a court has basically made a statute, which is what this court just did, and undid an act of the Queen, an act of the Crown in the process. You know, the Queen prorogues Parliament. And the judges just said, well, nope, it's not prorogued. These judges are now the highest authority in the land, in the United Kingdom. It's not the Queen. We're ruled by judges. But unlike the US, you know, at least, yeah, there's been a whole ton of abuse and ridiculous rulings from the Supreme Court in the US. But at least in the US, there is some political oversight on those judges. You know, there's a process. They've got to be nominated by the president. They go through a confirmation hearing in the Senate. You know, there's a democratic oversight and democratic accountability, at least in how those judges are put in their place. And I'm definitely not saying that system is perfect, but there's some democratic accountability. In the UK, we've got this situation now where the judges have placed themselves as the highest authorities in the land, and there is no democratic control or accountability. They're self-selecting. These Supreme Court justices basically choose their own successors, bring in more people as they come up through the judicial system, choose other lawyers. There's no government involvement. There's no democratic involvement. And they're the highest authorities, these unelected lawyers, basically, that put themselves and select themselves in their position. And Mr. Flurry quoted that quote from the Spiked magazine on the show yesterday, where it basically says we now have a new tyrannical layer at the top of the British government. The ultimate power with no accountability. And the left are saying, well, you can't criticize the judgment. We have to abide by it. Now, there's a referendum of 17.4 million people, and they'll say, oh, we'll ignore that. They got that wrong. But then they'll say, well, we've got to respect that judgment. You can't criticize those 11 judges. You can't say they got it wrong. Now, in the wake of that ruling and with Parliament being recalled yesterday, there was just politician after politician calling on Prime Minister Boris Johnson to resign. And now we're just in this really absurd situation. You know, they would give these speeches about how he needs to resign, how he's completely unfit to be Prime Minister. I mean, if you're in the States, everything you've heard about the left saying about President Trump, they were saying about Prime Minister Boris Johnson yesterday. You know, immoral and unfit for office and undignified, and, you know, just about everything you could think of. But the crazy thing over here is they have the power to get rid of him. They kept saying, well, he should resign. They can fire him. They could hold a vote of no confidence in the House of Commons. And if he loses, well, that puts us on the path probably to fresh elections. They could call for and vote for fresh elections. But they won't do it. They don't want to face the voters because they're afraid that the voters back Prime Minister Boris Johnson. So because of this, they keep giving these speeches about how horrible he is and about how he needs to resign and how he needs to step down. But then he and the other conservatives say, well, okay, if you think I'm a horrible person, if you think I shouldn't be in power, if you shouldn't think I shouldn't be Prime Minister, why don't you get rid of me? Let's have fresh elections. Let's go back to the people and let's see what they say. And they won't do it. And it's all because of they want to stop Brexit. We had a great speech from the Attorney General yesterday, Geoffrey Cox, in Parliament. Most of the speeches were incredibly frustrating. He makes a great point. The clip I'll play, it's a couple of minutes long, but it's well worth watching, pointing out just what Parliament is doing. He started just before this speech talking about how Parliament kept blocking Brexit. Every form of Brexit Parliament was blocking, trying to get in the way, refused to put it in motion. And then it talks about how, well, after blocking everything, Parliament then has also refused to step down, also refused to have fresh elections. It's just sitting there trying to stop Brexit. And so here are the comments from the Attorney General.
This Parliament is a dead Parliament. Yes. It should no longer sit. It has no moral right to sit on these green benches. And whatever... They don't like to hear it, Mr. Speaker. They don't like the truth. Twice they have been asked to let the electorate decide upon whether they should continue to sit in their seats while they block 17.4 million people's votes. This Parliament is a disgrace. Given the opportunity, since I am asked, let me tell them the truth. They could vote no confidence at any time, but they're too cowardly. They could agree to a motion to allow this House to dissolve, but they're too cowardly to give it a go. This Parliament should have the courage to face the electorate. But it won't. It won't, because so many of them are really all about preventing us leaving the European Union at all. But the time is coming. The time is coming, Mr. Speaker, when even these turkeys won't be able to prevent Christmas.
And the cheering and the booing and the clapping goes on for quite a while. They won't face the voters. They know that the people may have voted for Brexit, but so many of those politicians, those elites, they think they know better. The Supreme Court, they know better. They know better than what the English law and standard constitutional procedures actually say. Well, they know better than that. And they've invented a new law. The BBC knows better. The Church of England, they know better than the 17.4 million voters. And so it comes to doing just whatever it takes to keep Britain in the European Union, even if it means not facing the voters, because they know better. And it's just like the U.S., just like the U.S. with impeaching President Trump. Mr. Flurry played this clip, this very short clip. Yes, I think it was in a montage when he played it. But it's exactly the same attitude. This is the Democrat Al Green talking about impeaching President Trump.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
So, well, we can't trust the voters in America to reelect, to have the choice of who gets to be president. You know, they can't be trusted to look at the facts, to read the transcripts of the phone calls themselves, and come to their own decision as to who should be president. They can't make that decision because they might get the answer wrong. We, the more enlightened members of the elite, well, we must impeach President Trump so that that can't happen. And it's the same in the UK. You know, we cannot allow the voters to bring Britain out of the European Union. They may have voted for that, but we, the elites, the enlightened elites, we must stop it. We know better. And look at the way politicians have lied and cheated to make this happen. I spoke about this last time I was on the show, I think it was. And we played clip after clip from these different MPs saying, we must respect the results of the referendum. Saying things like, well, I personally disagreed with the vote. I think Britain should have stayed in the European Union, but I promise to respect the vote. And they were saying things like, well, because if we don't respect that vote, if we don't respect the vote of 17.4 million people, well, we're in a banana republic. We're no longer a democracy. And those very same people who are making that statement are now not respecting the vote and now sitting in Parliament preventing Brexit and preventing any fresh elections that could lead to Brexit. Now, they want a second referendum. Well, some of them do. Some of them don't want any referendum at all and just want to ignore the last vote, pretend it didn't, that referendum, pretend it didn't happen. But there are some that call for a second referendum, and that in itself is anti-democratic. You know, this is what the EU has done time and time again. They lose an election, and they go back to the people and say, well, you got the answer wrong. Go away and have another vote. And we've seen that, I think it was a couple of times in Ireland. Sometimes they don't always let them have a second vote, but normally they pour a ton of money in, and then they make sure they win on the second try. But in the UK, they don't even want to do that. You know, a straightforward repeat of the referendum. I think the elites are afraid they'd lose again if they did something like that. So they want to make sure that a proper Brexit isn't even an option. That it's not, that when people go to vote in that second referendum, they can't choose that. They can't tick that box. You know, they want to make it, the option is either between staying in the European Union or leaving the European Union with a deal approved and agreed by pro-EU politicians. And this deal would keep us in the single market. It would keep us in all these parts of the different European Union. It would maybe take us 10% out of the European Union. So they want to make sure that a proper Brexit isn't even an option. A second referendum where people can't vote to leave. And then one of the other things that really galled me yesterday, that was just so blatantly hypocritical, was when all of these anti-democratic Remainers were complaining about the language people were using. Now, they made a big deal about the fact that Boris Johnson called the bill that would force Britain to capitulate to the EU and not leave without a deal. He called that the surrender bill, which I think is a pretty fair description of it. That's what it does. It forces us to surrender to the European Union. It means that no matter... I mean, just to talk about this bill for a minute, because it doesn't get talked about enough, or explained enough properly in the mainstream press. But you know, imagine if you went into a car dealership to buy a used car, and you told the car dealer, I'm going to buy that car, and it doesn't matter what the price is or what conditions are, I'm going to buy it, and I'm not going to walk away. You know, do you think you'd get a good deal on that car? That would suddenly become the most expensive used car in the country. If he knew for a fact, well, there's nothing, you wouldn't walk away. And that's what this surrender bill does. It tells the government, well, you can't walk away. You can't threaten to walk away. Well, what's the European Union going to do? They'll put the toughest, worst deal that they could possibly come up with. So that's the surrender bill. And so Mr. Johnson, he called it the surrender bill. I think he also called it the capitulation bill. And there are people in Parliament saying, well, he's using inflammatory language, that he's putting people's lives in danger. This is what they were claiming. And again, the hypocrisy here is just staggering. You know, just a week or two ago, a comedian displayed a model of Boris Johnson's severed head. And he was applauded by the left-wing press. You know, The Guardian was talking about how great his show was. And he was holding up Boris Johnson's severed head. There are left-wing protesters, demonstrators there was a picture I saw today with a bridge where they had effigies of the Prime Minister being hung. And the slogan was something like, hang the Tories. And yet, the Prime Minister is the one that's using inflammatory language, according to this. You know, the Prime Minister's been accused of being a dictator, of leading a coup. Yet by calling it the surrender bill, it's inflammatory language. And I mean, he's certainly the first dictator in history to try repeatedly to hold elections, only to be blocked by his opponents. Leaders in the left, they've said, and these are not just activists, but actually MPs, people sitting in Parliament. They've said that the Conservatives are murderers because they want to stop the increase of spending in Britain's welfare state. If you don't want the spending to go up as much as they want it to go up, according to them, you're a murderer. You're killing children. They've been called Nazis. Very recently, MPs were calling leaders of this government Nazis. Brexit supporters, you turn on the BBC, they're constantly being called racists. There was a montage I saw, and I can't play it because it was just too, the language was too vile, but a montage of Labour's shadow chancellor, basically John McDonnell, pretty much Jeremy Corbyn's number two, pretty much the second most important person in the Labour Party. And there's so much swearing and bad language directed at conservative politicians. Like I said, I just can't play it. And it's just all sorts of insulting names that he calls them. He even talks about wanting it so that a conservative can't show their face anywhere in the country without being attacked. That's what he says. And yet, Parliament and all the left-wing press make this big deal about the Prime Minister using inflammatory language because he calls this bill the surrender bill. And you can go further. I mean, with the Labour Party, these are the leaders of the Labour Party. These are people that sit down and have tea with Hamas and talk about their friends in Hezbollah. Jeremy Corbyn has applauded the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, when they have murdered MPs. He celebrated men who have murdered MPs and murdered members of the royal family, murdered British citizens. And he'll memorialize them and applaud them. But it's the Prime Minister that's leading to violence because he calls it the surrender bill. And it's just, like I said, it's almost staggering, the level of hypocrisy. But it's the same in the United States. It's exactly the same spirit that we see on display in both of these countries. And so you have this position now where, we had a referendum all the way in the run-up, and we played this last time on the show. If you want to know more about Brexit, you can go and listen to that show that I did a week or two ago, where there are, again, all of these clips from all of these leaders saying, we'll respect the votes of the referendum. This is your one choice. We're not going to do any redos, and we will do what you choose. Then they had that election, and there were some that right away wanted to undo it, wanted another referendum, but most MPs said, well, we'll respect your decision. We'll get Britain out of the European Union. It was in the manifesto of all the major parties. We will respect the referendum, and we'll get Britain out of the European Union. And now they're doing the opposite. I mean, they've revealed themselves to be liars. They said, we're going to respect your decision, and then they've work tirelessly to reverse it. And now they're refusing to hold another election. They got elected under false pretenses. They got elected because they lied to their voters. And now they're sitting in Parliament blocking another election so they can't be thrown out based on those lies. So that now that people know the truth, they can't get rid of them. And they're behaving like dictators. And there's nothing wrong in calling them out in that fact. And they're endangering the peace of the nation by their conduct. We heard that quote from David Starkey at the start. The way that things have ended in the past with this kind of thing is civil war. What they're doing is really dangerous. So why this behavior? Why this behavior, both in the UK and the US? And it was just, there was so much anger in that debate yesterday, especially from Labour. I mean, I think you can definitely understand why people that are pro-Brexit are angry when you've had, when you've got this situation where, you know, they've been lied to, the elites are trying to stop Britain from leaving the European Union. But most of the anger, and the most dramatic anger, was coming from the left. There was just this rabid hatred of Boris Johnson. And on the surface, that doesn't really make much sense. You know, Boris Johnson has been around in politics for quite some time, for years. You know, he was mayor of London. And sure, back then, you know, he was a conservative mayor of London, so he wasn't like the left's best friend. You know, they weren't staunch supporters of him. They were on opposite sides, but you didn't see this rabid hatred. You know, he wasn't called a racist back then. There wasn't just this screaming at him. And at the debate in Parliament, you know, you had people kind of turning purple in the mouth, screaming, just this huge anger on display. Here's just one example of it, clip six.
Mr. Speaker, I came into the chamber today thinking I felt sorry for the Attorney General. But as he started, I did, fair enough. But every word he has uttered, no shame today, no shame at all. The fact that this government cynically manipulated the prorogation to shut down this House so that it couldn't work as a democratic assembly. He knows that that is the truth. Yes. And to come here with his barrister's bluster, yes, to obfuscate the truth, and for a man like him, a party like this, and a leader like this, this Prime Minister, to talk about morals and morality is a disgrace! Yes.
I'm not sure I could discern in that marshmallow of the rhetoric any actual question. But insofar there was a question, there's an answer. If the honourable gentleman thinks that the government should no longer be governing, tell his leader to bring a motion of no confidence this afternoon. Tell his leader to agree to a simple one-line statute that fixes the election by a simple majority, and we would be delighted to meet him wherever he chooses in front of the electorate. Who will judge whether the machinations which he supports and the devices he resorts to in order to make sure this dead parliament continues are right or wrong?
So you just saw this outpouring of anger, and I did like the Attorney General's response there. Well, like, if the Prime Minister is so terrible, if he's so immoral as you're screaming, well, don't just scream about it. You can do something about it. You can have a vote of no confidence. You can go back to the people and say, "Are you sure you want this guy as Prime Minister?" And we can have a new vote. But you're just seeing all of this. I mean, it reminds me a bit of like Maxine Walters or some of those unhinged Democrats that you see in the United States that are just so angry they're incoherent. But the Telegraph, they wrote today, just look at what the EU referendum has done to us. On all sides, it's turned the moderate militant, the rational rabid, the calm crazed. More than ever before, political thinking seems informed not by evidence or reason, but by pride, pigheadedness, and delusion. And above all else, anger. What we're witnessing isn't the conventional cut and thrust of debate. It's a collective nervous breakdown. And I think in some ways that's right. Now, I think there's always this fallacy that you get very often in the press where they feel like they have to... You get this kind of false neutrality where you have to attribute blame to both sides, even if in reality blame is mostly on one side. But you've seen this rabid, angry response to Brexit, to trying to keep Britain in the European Union. And there's just been this irrational rage. What is going on here? Well, there's a critical cause to understand behind this trend, behind this attack on law, on the Constitution, in the United Kingdom and in the United States. Like Nigel Farage said in that tweet that we read at the start, it's exactly the same thing in both countries. But there's a deeper reason for that than Nigel Farage understands. Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry, he talked about this in his book, Great Again, The Unseen Cause Behind This Political Crisis. And he began that book, this book, it talks specifically about American politics. Great Again, that definitely not only about American politics, but that's where the main focus, and you see that in these quotes. But the spirit and everything Mr. Flurry says in this, it applies to Britain, and it applies to what we're seeing with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. It's vital to understanding all of world events. So it's definitely not a book just for Americans. It's a book we all need to understand our world. It's a book if you want to understand British politics, like I said, or just global trends, it's a book you need to understand. And he writes, do you have a favorable view of the founding fathers, the Constitution, the separation of powers, the rule of law, manifest destiny, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, free market economy, and America's role in World War I and II? If you do, then surely you are deeply alarmed by the state of America today. All these pillars of American history and identity are being vilified and destroyed. And we see in the UK all the same kind of pillars being vilified and destroyed. But in that book, his main point is there is a spiritual dimension, Mr. Flurry wrote, to America's decline that most people don't see. And it's the same in the UK. That's why it's the same spirit in both countries. I mean, otherwise, why would you have such a similar trend, such a similar spirit, such similar patterns in these two countries that are dealing with very different things? Getting Britain out of the European Union versus, a radical left that's getting more and more left-wing. And there are definitely similarities and parallels, but why is it so dramatically the same? And it's because of this underlying spiritual reality. The crisis, Mr. Flurry writes, facing this nation is not because of a bad president. The cause is far deeper, but most people are unwilling to face it. And it's the same in the UK. It's tempting to blame it all on the European Union. But the cause is not Europe. The cause isn't the Brexit vote. There's a much deeper cause. And we need to understand that cause. We need to understand that cause so that we can have true hope as we go through all of this. I think it's easy to get angry, irritated when surrounded by such naked hypocrisy, when you see people shouting, where's the humility, as they try and block the vote of 17.4 million people because they know better. And to see people lie and get away with it. To see a Supreme Court vote where former Prime Minister John Major, who last prorogued Parliament so he could avoid questions in a scandal, talks about or gets a court judgment that says, well, you can't provoke Parliament to uphold the will of 17.4 million people, and sounds so high and mighty about it. And he manages to sound so good when he did exactly the same things from much baser motives. To see people like that get away with it. Now, we could hope that Mr. Trump, Mr. Johnson will fix it all, to put our hope and kind of justice in them. And I think they will fix things a little bit. I know the Bible indicates that they will fix things maybe for a time. But when we understand the true source of what we're seeing in our countries, the spiritual dimension of what we're seeing in our countries, well, we know that they're not going to fix it for good. That if that's where we put our hope, we are going to be disappointed. We're just going to find ourselves more angry, more irritated in the end. We need to see the real cause so that we can understand the real solution. And so that we can see the real hope. Mr. Flurry, in that booklet, he writes, America's problems are spiritual, and solving them requires spiritual solutions. And this applies to Britain too. Just quoting a bit more from this book, and like I said, it talks specifically about America, but we're seeing the same trend on display in other countries, particularly in the UK and in Israel. Mr. Flurry writes, what is happening to America's leadership, its domestic policy and foreign policy is not just a quirk of history. And he was writing this while Mr. Obama was president still, when Mr. Trump was kind of coming up. The fact that Americans are casting the Constitution to the ground. I mean, what did we hear earlier from the historian David Starkey? England's Constitution lies smashed on the ground. Casting the Constitution to the ground and encouraging lawlessness in their marriages, in their government, in their foreign policy, in their Brexit policy, you could say, has a very definite cause. We must know our enemy in order to understand what is going on in America, and I could add, in Britain. And in that booklet, Great Again, Mr. Flory writes, Revelation 12 and verse 12 reveals that Satan is our deadly adversary. He is the one behind these dangerous developments. The devil is full of wrath. He's getting control of the radical left. The fruits prove it. I think you could say the fruit's proven. He's getting control of the European Union and those pro-EU kind of radicals, or you could call them within the United Kingdom. These people, right, Mr. Flory, want to bring this system down. They are deceived. But the problem is much deeper than that. Our people don't understand their Bibles as they once did. They don't understand the many scriptures about Satan the devil. He has an agenda, his agenda against America, and it is prevailing because of America's sinful way of life. And that all applies to Britain as well. Mr. Flory writes, only God can protect us from this powerful evil spirit. There's all these scriptures in the Bible that talk about a devil, that make the spiritual reality clear. I mean, if you believe in the Bible, if you believe the Bible is the word of God, you pretty much have no choice. Well, you don't have any choice. If you believe the Bible, you have to believe in a devil. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 calls him the God of this world, who's blinded the minds of them that believe not. 2 Corinthians 11 talks about how he transforms himself into an angel of light, how he can deceive. Mr. Flory writes, the devil's fingerprints are all over what is happening to America today. The rampant deceit, the lies that we see, bears the stamp of the father of liars. The contempt for law, the contempt for the Constitution, springs from Satan's own lawlessness. That's what we see in the UK too. Still, Mr. Flory writes, many people scoff about there being a devil while he is tearing them apart. They know little or nothing about their Bibles. They don't understand anything about God, nor do they know the devil. Until they do, the problems will only intensify. Those who fail to see the devil behind what is happening in America today will end up being their victims. Let me warn you again not to forget Revelation 12, verses 7 to 12. Satan and millions of his demons have been cast down from a war in heaven. So this is where all the lies, where the deceit comes from. And those same passages in Revelation that talk about Satan the devil, they talk about an empire that Satan works with, a beast power. And that's what's being raised up in the European Union right now. That's why there's so much irrational rage when Britain tries to leave the European Union. You know, those elites that think they know better than everybody else, that arrogance makes them open to Satan's influence. And they want to keep Britain in the European Union. And Boris Johnson, he's not going to solve this deeper problem. Maybe he will succeed in getting Britain out of the European Union, but he's not going to defeat Satan the devil. But there is a great hope. And it's a great hope that's really tied up in this time of year, in holy days that God has us keep at this time of year. We need new leadership in this world. Our countries need new leadership. The Bible is full of prophecies of unjust judges, justice that doesn't go forth, of leaders that take advantage of the people. And on Monday, we have a day that points to that new leadership, the solution, the real solution to all of the problems that we see around us. I want to talk about this solution for the last, and this day that points us to this solution for the last few minutes of this program. And we can read about this day that's coming up on Monday in Leviticus chapter 23 and verse, where we can start in verse 24. And here, well, it's on verse 23. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall you have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire. So there's a commandment here to have a holy day. On the first day of the seventh month, on the Hebrew calendar. And that's what is coming up. I forgot to double check, but I'm pretty sure that's coming up on Monday. Actually, I've got all the dates here, I believe. But this is coming up and very soon. I think my date's on here, explained in 2013. Yeah, it is Monday. Okay, I'm just checking myself. I knew it was Monday. I'm all prepared and everything to go and keep this holy day. But then sometimes when you're behind the mic, you want to make sure everything you say is absolutely certain. So Monday. And it's a day that's commanded to be kept here in the book of Leviticus, but this isn't just an Old Testament holy day. There you can see throughout the New Testament, these same holy days that are set out in Leviticus chapter 23, well, they're laid out in the New Testament too, as well. For example, you can see in John chapter 7, verse 37 specifically, you can see Jesus Christ keeping the Feast of Tabernacles that's laid out in Leviticus chapter 23. You can see the Passover laid out, described in Leviticus chapter 23. You can turn to the New Testament, to 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7 and 8, where it basically says, let us therefore keep the feast, let us keep the Passover. It's commanded in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. I won't take the time to go through them, but you can look in the book of Acts, and there are all these different casual references to these holy days, because for years and years after Jesus Christ died, the apostles were keeping these holy days. You know, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 6, for example, it mentions before, we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. Then later in that chapter, there's this casual reference to Pentecost, where we wanted to get back to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Pentecost. And then chapter 27 and verse 9 talks about the Day of Atonement, keeping the fast after the fast was passed, the fast that is described in Leviticus chapter 23. So all of these holy days in Leviticus chapter 23, you can turn to the New Testament and see the New Testament church keeping them. These holy days are binding on us today. They are something commanded for us today. And if this is new to you, if you haven't heard about these holy days before, I'd really encourage you to read our free book, Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, Which? And that will really prove to you that these are binding. You know, you can look up in more time those scriptures and more that prove that these holy days are for us today. And you can get that book on our website, thetrumpet.com. We're more than happy to send you a free copy, or if you want to read it online so that you can read it before Monday, and to prove the truth about this holy day to yourself, you can read the full text of that on our website, thetrumpet.com. So these days are commanded for us today. This Feast of Trumpets is commanded for us today. And what is it about? How does it tie into what I've just been talking about? All the leadership problems that we have in the world, of Satan being cast down and causing problems for our nation. Well, there's a whole lot in the Bible that talks about, that explains why. If you look, for example, in why we keep this day. If you look, for example, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 16 says, for the Lord himself shall descend from heaven. So this is saying, well, Jesus Christ is going to come down from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. The trumpet will sound, and the dead in Christ shall rise. And there's a whole bunch of other scriptures that describe a trumpet being blown as Jesus Christ returns. So many different ones that talk about this trumpet. And that's what this day points to new leadership that's coming soon for the whole world. And there's so many different things the trumpet symbolizes. But for the last couple of minutes, I just wanted to point to one in particular. Again, I won't take the time to turn there, but you can see in 1 Kings chapter 1, verses 34 and 39, when Solomon is being crowned, there was a trumpet involved. There were trumpets. There were blowing trumpets. There's a connection, powerful connection between trumpets and royalty. Trumpets and government. The Bible gives us enough detail to see that the trumpet was a regular part of the coronation of kings in the Old Testament times in Israel. When Absalom declared himself king, he did so accompanied by trumpets. In the northern tribes of Israel, when Jehu declared himself king, there were trumpets. We had an article in our Christian Living magazine, The Royal Vision, that stated the sound of the shofar, this type of trumpet, could be joyful blasts heralding a king. In fact, five references of shofar in the Old Testament refer to coronations, namely those on the throne of David. And it's interesting, you can watch the video of the last coronation that we had in the United Kingdom with the Queen, and trumpets are everywhere. They're still a royal instrument. So there's this trumpets being associated with a new government, a new king coming down to rule the earth. Jesus Christ coming to rule the earth. Our Bible correspondence course states, the Feast of Trumpets pictures Christ's return, which will be the greatest and most important event to occur in the entire universe. And it says that, or it talks about how he'll be coming to restore, or that the chief item in need of restoration on earth is the government of God. You know, that's what we need. When you look at all of these problems, all of these government problems and lies and hypocrisy and deceit, we need a new government. We need a revolution. But we need a revolution brought about with this perfect government. And that's another key lesson of this Feast of Trumpets. It's a day where you can read Revelation and see so many trumpets also associated with some catastrophic events, with war and destruction. Trumpets heralding these massive battles because man is incapable of ruling man. This is where man's government leads. It leads to all this destruction. But then the solution, also wrapped up in this Feast of Trumpets, is the return of Jesus Christ, his government. Look at one final scripture, Revelation chapter 5 and verse 10. And this is talking about, and has made them, the saints, unto our God, kings and priests, and they shall reign on the earth. This is where God's saints are going to reign, under Jesus Christ, on the earth. It's a government that's coming to earth. It's a practical solution to all of our problems. It's the real hope. You know, we're not going to get anywhere in the long run with hope in President Trump, hope in Boris Johnson, even if they do some good in the short term. But this is the real hope. This is going to get rid of lies and hypocrisy in government forever. If you want to know more about this Feast of Trumpets, if that's new to you, like I said, please read that book, Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which we also have another radio show called The Trumpet Bookshelf. You can go and look at that at kpcg.fm. The latest show on that was called The Most Important Event in Universe History. That's all about the Feast of Trumpets. So you can go and learn more about that day there. Otherwise, you can come back. We'll be back on tomorrow here at kpcg.fm or 101.3 on the FM dial.